Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Tom Lucy Plus One, the podcast. For those of you who don't know, my name is Tom Lucy. I'm a comedian. I'm 21 years old. And this is a podcast where I chat to different people from the world of entertainment. And this week, I'm talking to Wayne Sleep. Wayne Sleep is a very well-known dancer and TV personality, and has had a hell of a life. And we had a great chat. He invited me over to his office in London's Covent Garden, and we had a cup of tea, and he told me stories from his showbiz-filled life. So I think you're going to really enjoy this one. Without any further ado, this is Wayne Sleep. I love that you thought this was a video recording.
I know, and I got the stuff out, and
did
I
you think
did
I was in the taxi.
Then I left, then I threw it away, because it's green. Shouldn't be green, should it? It's green, sticky, outy stuff.
What's green?
Glue. The when I had Pomard in the Big Brother house.
Oh, right, I see.
Because we had to dress like 50s. I'll cover all that up. We had to, because look, I've been doing my stores.
It's a very flowery shirt you've got.
I know, hey.
Yeah.
I had to wear flowers for Andrew Lloyd Webber's 70th birthday.
Is that what it was for?
Yeah.
When was he 70?
This year, just now.
When was it?
He took over his own theatre for a night. Have we started?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Andrew's 70 this year, so am I. Yeah. And Andrew took over the Drury Lane Theatre, which he owns.
Just round the corner.
Just round the corner. Very easy to get to.
Yeah.
And instead of taking the stalls out, he gave 42nd Street a night off.
Yeah. You know. And he had a birthday party in the theatre.
Yes.
That's amazing. How many people were there?
Oh, I don't know, loads.
All sitting in the seats? Or did he take all the seats out?
No. He put a floor over the seats.
Oh, my, wow. That's clever.
Well, it's easier, isn't it? When you think about it. But whoever thought of that was brilliant.
And did he have people performing?
There was a sort of... It wasn't too long. It was very good.
Yeah.
He had people from School of Rock, but they were with people singing Phantom at the same time as this huge electric guitars going, I'm the Phantom of the Opera. And it got higher and higher and higher, and it was very orgasmous and very crazy and wonderful. And it was different. It wasn't all tribute-y stuff, you know. It was very good indeed.
That's very cool.
Mm.
How have you known Andrew?
And his wife did it for him, Madeline.
She organised the whole thing?
Yes, fantastic. Wow. Well done, Madeline.
Was it a surprise?
Oh, I doubt it.
I was going to say.
I mean, how can you keep Drury Lane Theatre a surprise when you own it?
From yourself. We've rented out a West End theatre for you. That's
well,
amazing.
I'm sure he looks at the books occasionally to see what's going on. And then invited people from all West End shows later on, but I'd already gone by then.
Yeah. How long have you known Andrew Lloyd Webber for?
Oh, blimey. Excuse me, I'm eating with my mouth full.
That's okay. We've interrupted Wayne's lunch here.
Yes, well, it's sort of. It's a bit of Marks and Sparks with a bit of mayonnaise. It's fine, fine.
That's literally nice.
Okay, so it is. You'll edit, won't you?
Yes, yeah. No.
Thank God for that. I ramble on and on.
No, I like the bit about you explaining what the lunch is. I think that's good.
All right, all but anyway, so I've known Andrew down, what was it? It must have been 1980.
Wow.
Yes, that's right. When I did a little show called Dash, which was my own show, I'd was doing it sort of like I'd got a bit of leave of absence.
Yeah.
And I was just getting tired of all the roles I had at Covent Garden.
Yeah.
Because I'd been there 18 years. And the people used to create roles for me. So, you know, often, you know, I'd get a new role, which was fantastic. And, you know, they'd retired and I didn't feel anything new was going to come my way.
Right.
And everything was symmetrical. You see, if we had 8 boys in a row, if I was the fourth, it would dip rather and look,
sure.
look odd or funny. Or
yeah,
peculiar.
Yeah.
So all those
did you find battles, that was did you find being a bit smaller was difficult?
Excuse
forgetting me.
I've been a manic depressive all my life from it. I mean, quite frankly, I shouldn't have started it if I knew
really?
I thought I was good.
Really?
You have to be 5'7"
but
to get into the course.
That's not true.
But it is true. You can't get in. You wouldn't get in now. No, I don't know how I got in. But I'm only 5'2".
Yeah.
And the required height is 5'7" at least, and that's considered small for a man.
Yeah.
And there are height restraints. The thing about classical ballet is that it is so unjust and unfair.
Yeah.
Why do I say that? Well, you can be the best at what you do, and you can come first in all the exams, and you can feel elated that you are the best of your year, etc.
Yeah.
And then you don't grow. So you're not going to get in any company in the world. I don't even qualify for a dwarf. I'm over 4'8". You have to be under 4'8". Because I was going to do Snow White and all the 7 dwarfs, you know.
And but you were too tall.
Well, my name is Sleepy.
Yeah.
Wake up grumpy. Seldom bashful.
Yeah.
I am Doc because I've got 2 honorary degrees. And the rest.
So when you were... How old were you when you started... Dancing. Yeah.
I think I danced out of the womb, basically.
So
I mean,
from the beginning.
Just a baby, you know. I mean, music. It was music. Just music. We had nothing.
We had nothing when I was born. Mm. I mean, we all shared a house and we all had a room on each floor of the house.
In Plymouth, is that
yes,
right?
Yeah. So my auntie's on the first floor. My great-grandfather brought me up because my mother had to go and work in Fuller's Restaurant
right.
in 1948.
Yeah.
And she was a nurse in the war and then she had to get a proper job. When you give her a proper job like that. No, it's not a proper job, but she had me out of wedlock, you see.
Oh, wow.
So she was sort of thinking, well, she better not do the nursing because people will ask questions.
And, yes.
And it was a horrible thing in those days to be chastised for having our child out of wedlock, not like today so much.
Yeah.
And so she used to go to work and my great-grandfather used to look after me. So I've always been wise, you see. I've never felt older than I was, you know. I feel like I was an elderly person all the time.
Did you feel when you were younger that you were a lot older than your years?
Well, I didn't realise that till later looking back.
Yeah.
I do feel that now,
Do you think that's because you, because of how the situation you were in when you were younger?
Yes, I think so. I'm fending for myself a little bit.
It forced you to grow up a bit quicker.
Yes, and also when people would try and help me, I had a sort of chip on my shoulder. No, I'll do it myself.
Really?
I had to do everything myself.
Do you still feel that way? Or
yes.
That...
Well, I'd like other people to do it, but can they? That's the problem.
Yeah.
I bet you're the same. You
oh,
know,
well.
Could you have that? No. You've got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. Anyway, so anyway.
So dancing was like, so was did presumably growing up like that in Plymouth, dancing felt like a million miles away.
Oh, no, it was
like
a million miles
end
from
and...
anything, but it was right in my kitchen, my love. It was lovely. Because my great-grandfather used to play the saucepan lids with his long nails of his fingers. Chugga-chugga-chug. Apparently, I'd wobble round the floor and be happy as Larry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and entertain everybody, apparently.
So you would have fallen into the category of a performer who you know, was a performer right from the beginning.
Yes. I wanted to be on the stage, definitely. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But I saw a raised platform. Apparently, I don't remember it. I was three. And there was a slightly raised platform at my Auntie Cyril's wedding. There was a church hall and we had the reception in a hall.
Yeah.
And there was a raised platform, you know, for a stage sort of situation. And I wobbled onto it and apparently entertained everybody there for about 10 minutes. Stand up.
Stand up?
I did 10 minutes stand up.
Really?
Well, I could walk. Yeah, and just entertained them, just did stupid things, and they were laughing and crying with laughter. I mean, I just wanted to be an entertainer.
So did all of your family, when you were younger, sort of think, oh, Wayne will end up in show business?
Yes, my mother didn't want it, though.
Really?
Well, she would like me to have had, like I said earlier, a proper job, you know, sort of like be a doctor or something like that. You know, the contrary life of an entertainer was frowned on a lot in those days, but not so by the lower middle class, the lower class, because that was a way out of your situation.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
And so it was, they said, you've got to put into something, stage school or something. Well, there were no stage schools at all. So there was only a dancing class you could go to in those days. And so I was enrolled at the age of 4 or 5 at the little dance school in Plymouth. And I did... I played a soldier marching to rhythm and stuff. And I remember I could do it with my eyes closed. I felt so special. And my mother had to make the uniform. You know, the parents always had to make the clothes.
Yeah.
Well, my mother wasn't good at that sort of thing, you know. A lot of mothers were, you know, ready 10 years before, you know, because they're theatrical mums, you know, pushing their daughters forward.
So when you were at the stage school, were all the other...
It was a stage school, it was dancing class, once a week.
Dancing class,
yeah.
Were all the other children in the class from families that were much different to yours?
A little bit more wealthy, I should think, yes.
Yeah.
And but they knew what they were doing. We had no clue of any of it, you know. We didn't have an aunt that had a child at a dance school. We had nobody at a dance school.
Yeah.
You know, it was completely alien to us. And I remember my mother had to make me a Busby hat.
Yeah.
And I had Busby, you know, changing the guard routine or whatever it was. And I remember she got this piece of cardboard. I wasn't very happy with it, actually. And she put a bit of blackout curtain in it from the wall. She has a blackout curtain left. So she put that as the black bit.
Yes.
As well. And then she said something like, no, we don't go to the toilet. And, well, if you do, it's on. There was no lavatory chain. I said, why? She said, it's round your neck, because she needed a chain around my neck. So we just made do, you see.
Yeah.
And I just remember going on stage, and it was the colour as well, the colour of everything. I think he was going into a magical world that wasn't my own.
And it was just a sort of escape.
Yeah, an instinct to escape.
Glamorous.
Yeah. Glamour, colour, music, lights.
So did you ever...
Performing, entertaining, making people laugh. I just loved it all.
And did you ever... through your teenage years, think of doing anything else, or was it always...
I couldn't do anything else. Yeah. I've got to my grade 3 in piano, but my father was on night duty, so every time I tried to practice, he said, shut up, your father's in bed! Well, that was a good excuse not to practice, you see, so I got very lazy.
Yeah.
And I finally used to go to my piano teacher, and she'd say, oh, God, just practice for half an hour, would you? Because I hadn't done it.
So then how old... So what? At what age did you leave school? And
leave school?
Yeah.
What school?
The school you went to when you were a kid. Did you leave school at
16? Oh, no, we left... Oh, it's 16, very complicated, 18. All this. Oh, no. It all changed when I was 12.
12?
Well, when I was... I was born in Plymouth, and when I was 5, my mother married my stepfather.
Okay, yeah.
And he had a sister up in Hartlepool in County Durham.
Oh, wow.
And she said, come up here, you'll be able to take in lodgers, you can have a business.
Yeah.
It's much cheaper, and it was.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we got there. There was no call for lodgers at all. I think she just wanted him near her because she had no family up there.
Yeah.
And so I went there when I was 6. Then I went to the junior Baltic school. Then I got into the West Hartlepool Tech.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, very good. Rugby. Yeah. Myself. Yeah. I was hooker in the scrum. Well, I was.
Because I was small. Plymouth to Hartlepool's are pretty big. Plymouth to Hartlepool's about as far as you can travel in England.
I know. I mean, I love Hartlepool. The people are wonderful there. It was called Hartlepool then, and West Hartlepool was the big part.
Yeah.
And now we're called the Headland. And we were on blue buses.
Mm-hmm.
And the West Hartlepoolians were on red buses, and we couldn't be seen dead to go on a red bus.
Yeah.
Even if I was late, I'd just get a blue bus.
Okay.
Yes, because we had our own corporation and everything, and our own mayor and whatever. It's a very tiny
place. So how long were you... What age did you leave Hartlepool?
I won a scholarship to the Royal Ballet School when I was 12 out of 300 of my kids. Yeah. Well, I think it was about 180.
So you had to move to London?
Yeah. On my own.
At 12?
Yeah. Wow. I moved on. I auditioned because I started...
It's quite similar to Billy Elliot, isn't
well,
it?
Well, Lee Hall says he got a lot of it from my autobiography.
Really? Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, I get 3 mentions a show, so that shut me up.
It's spookily similar, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, I think all boys' stories are the same, really. But I lived in County Durham. Nobody else did. And I've written a book, which nobody else did.
Yeah.
And, the thing where the letter comes to say he's got the audition, they put it on the table for a treat, that's exactly what's in my book.
Really?
And my mother said, but, I mean,
Yeah.
If you're going to steal from the best.
So like in the story...
Well, Lee Hall does say on the radio, and I was told this, that he... based a lot of it on my biography because it was a boy getting into the Royal Ballet School when he was 12 years old.
Yes.
And that's what he based the story
on. And from County Durham.
And I had a stepfather rather than, a mother who'd gone. But it was like the one-sided only. It was only one-sided in a way.
Yeah.
And also it was frowned on by kids and everybody because I went to dancing class. God, I wouldn't even mention the ballet.
Yeah.
I didn't start ballet until I was about 9 or 10. I'd never seen a ballet before I got in the Royal Ballet School.
Yeah.
But I just happened to be good at it.
Yeah. And when you came down to here when you were 12, were you sort of surrounded by children who were from very rich families?
Oh, I don't know about that. No, I think in a way, you see, there's a lot of... the thing said wrong about that it's elitist.
Mm.
It's only the audience that's elitist.
Okay.
The people on stage are from all walks of life. Oh, you can dance, you're going to get in. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
You know, if you're very good, it doesn't matter if you're lower working class, but they'll find the money for you if you're exceptional. Yes. That's what they did for me.
Yeah.
So I won one of the two Levy Hume scholarships by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There's only seven of us left. You know, out of 300 kids or something.
Wow.
I was number 13.
Wow.
And so we had to do a written test, blah, blah, blah. And they said, right, now go home. And tomorrow you will take your son to Great Ormond Street Hospital to have his wrist x-ray to see how tall he would probably grow. Because the wrist, I suppose, it
developed.
Yes. Oh, you can do it. Oh, God, yeah.
It's like joining the army or something, isn't it?
Oh, it's worse. It's much more regimental and much more disciplined.
So they have to work out what...
And you have to point your feet.
What your predicted height will be.
Yes. And it was between 5'2" and 5'5". But,
yes,
fortunately for me and my mum,
yeah,
we had to catch the train back to Hartlepool because we had return tickets and couldn't afford another one the next day.
Yeah.
And besides, we couldn't afford to stay in hotels.
So you missed the medical.
So we missed the medical.
That's...
Isn't that fantastic?
That's great.
God must
so be. So possibly your whole sort of career based on that return.
Lower working class.
That's great.
It's fantastic, isn't
amazing.
It?
That's very cool.
It's just cool. So then I went from the West Hartlepool Tech. I couldn't go in the rugby team because Saturday mornings I had a ballet class in Newcastle. I was travelling all the time. I had 2-3 classes a week, so I'd go from Hartlepool. It took ages to get to Newcastle.
Yeah.
Then I'd get back, get home about 9 or 10 o'clock, then I'd have to do my own work. Well, and you know, got reprimanded all the time for never finishing anything, you know. And had to give up rugby for the boys' team because I had a ballet class in Newcastle,
yeah,
which was free,
yeah,
as well. So the ballet started to take prominence.
From quite a young age.
Yes. And so I left the West Hartlepool Tech and went to live in left the West Hartlepool Tech and went to live in Queen Victoria's Hunting Lodge in Richmond Park.
Okay.
Well, I knew which side my fork went. I wasn't worried because my mother brought me up well.
Sure, yeah.
So I lived in the park.
In the park.
Oh, those deer rutting every autumn really could have kept me awake. Joking.
So when you came to London, was that a sort of situation where you arrived and you just loved it and you never looked back?
Well, I was pale apparently and all that bit. Yeah, but I wasn't. And I had to be a day boy at first, you know. There were 5 boys to 25 girls in each class.
Yeah.
We got away with murder. But, I mean, no, it's not that really. No, we didn't really. But now, I'm glad to say, it's 50% boys and 50% girls.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Do you still do work for the ballet school in London?
I have a slight sort of discoloration about my career because when I was asked to join Cats and create Mr. Mistopheles in Cats with Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yes.
A lot of people put their nose up at me and said I'd gone commercial.
Really?
So with that sort of label, I'm not really asked to do much within the fraternity of the classical world.
Really?
Even though I was with the Royal Ballet for 18 years.
Yeah. How old are you when that Cats thing happened?
I don't know. Dates and figures.
Too many dates.
Darling, I'm 70, we'll never get through this.
It's not an exam this way.
No, it was 1948, 58, 68, 78, 88, 88, 98.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
The date that when you were in Cats with Angela.
Oh, yes. 48, 58.
Yeah.
68, 78.
78.
And 2.
80.
I'm not 80.
1980.
1980? Now just do it again. 48, 58. Count the leap years. 48, 58, 68, 78, 88, 98. That's 50.
50, yeah.
So you it was...
You were 50.
No. 32.
Okay.
In my prime.
And I did some, before I came here to talk to you, I did some research, you'll be pleased to hear.
Oh, why?
And you...
Well, you can say it all then.
Well, I just, you were...
No, that's very polite of you to do that. It's very...
Well,
very...
it's the least I can do, isn't it? I'm very
You've got all your shows, you've got time for that. You've got
so
to
much.
Write your own scripts, you've got to stand there in front of people and hope they'll laugh. I mean, you've got to catch trains everywhere.
Trains is the worst thing. That's the most difficult. But you were sorry, I've just seen a pair of leather shorts.
Oh yeah. They're Lederhosen. They're George's Lederhosen. We're using it as a cushion at the moment.
Okay.
She just opened the office. And,
I was just trying to ask that question, but I just saw a pair of green leather shorts on the
there
trip.
They are. They're real, they're from Austria.
Yeah, I imagine. They look pretty,
something like that.
But during the, I don't know, 70s, 80s it must have been, you were friends with some pretty incredible people. I mean, the first thing that came up when I put your name in was Freddie Mercury.
Oh, yes. But that was later.
How well did you know Freddie Mercury?
Well as I could, you know. I didn't
That's
live
amazing.
In his house.
No,
but
yeah.
I mean, I never rang him. Well, yes, I would ring him up occasionally, but he'd ring me as well. I mean, you could do that. We were that close enough to ring.
How did you meet Freddie Mercury?
He came, I can't really remember, but he came to the ballet. He came to see the ballet because he was really keen on opera and ballet.
Right.
And I think what he wanted to do, and what he would surely have done if he'd lived longer, would have created music for ballets and maybe even an opera. I'm sure he would have done that. And I was very interested in bringing in jazz music to the opera house. So I was doing it in the opposite way.
Yeah.
Andrew Lloyd Webber had been to the Royal Academy of Music and had popularised his classical variations by doing Joseph and all the musicals.
Yes.
So we were all in the same way of mind.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's what made Freddie and I get on so well.
Yeah.
And so he'd come to see the performances and other people he'd invite back as well. And after the performance, he'd invite us all back. It was a weekend. We had a day off. We'd all go back to his place in Oscourt.
Oscourt, yeah.
Number one Loan Place. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Mind you. Anyway, so, and he would then, and we'd just have a party. Well, not a party, a late night dinner.
That's
and
right.
We'd watch opera or something like that, or him or something like that. And he'd play piano and show me how he sort of created his music by being slightly different.
And is this at like the height of Queen fame?
Yeah. Well, they hadn't done
just about
Live
the most
Aid yet.
Man in the country.
They hadn't done Live Aid yet. That was a couple of years later. But I mean, yes, they were very famous. Of course they were. But I loved the fact that he was so interested in what I was interested in, bringing pop music, not pop music, but jazz, modern music into the opera house.
Yeah.
Which had never been done.
No.
It is now, but it wasn't then.
Yeah.
But also to have Freddie Mercury compose it, my goodness, what a coup.
Were they trying to get him to do that at the time, or do you think...
Who?
Were the ballet interested in getting him involved, or...
What? I beg your pardon, they'd probably never heard of him. No, that's unfair. But the ballet world would have been fixed on just what they do. They didn't want change, you know, or anything like that.
Yeah.
I remember once saying to one of the directors at the Opera House, I've got a friend called David Ockney, and if you're looking for a new Sleeping Beauty, he's just done Grimm's Fairy Tales, and he's done some at the Royal Court.
Yeah.
And the answer was, well, what's he done before?
Right.
And didn't ask him.
Yeah.
Then went on to create operas all over the world, with Guy and Bourne, Rates Progress and everything else, but they could have had him first. Never mind.
And what was he, you know, if someone who knew him on a personal level, what was he like as, you know...
Freddie Mercury,
just as a guy.
Okay, Freddie was just great. I mean, so generous.
Yeah.
I mean, all the best restaurants, and he'd get a thrill out of giving you a little bit of caviar. Have a little bit of caviar, Miss Sleep. You know, da-da-da-da-da. my name was Bridget the Midget. No, was that Elton? No, yes.
Bridget
Elton was Sharon. Well, he didn't call me that. It was silly. Silly names.
So he would give you...
He was Melina Mercouri, who was the great Greek actress.
Yeah.
Because his name's Freddie Mercury. Melina. Yeah. We used to call him Melina. And Rod Stewart had a gay name as well. I mean, not a gay name, a woman's name. We all had girly names. It was daft, but most men did. I mean, we all did in those days. It was just sort of
And
the,
these were sort of, you went out for dinner and things like that.
Yes. I would say, you know, oh, my nickname in the Royal Ballet was Wendy, for God knows. Well, because I was a bit like Peter Pan, I suppose, and Wendy. I don't get it. But some
Surely
names
Billy
are very
Elliot
good.
Would be a good nickname for you.
Billy Elliot. Yeah. Silly idiot. But, no, but to get real, to get serious about this,
yeah.
I mean, he was on a mission.
Yes.
And he even got Wayne Eagling to choreograph from the Royal Ballet, who was a choreographer.
Mm.
To come and do his video, and he wore tights a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he was really dedicated, and it would have happened. But we were all of the same ilk. Well, not all of us, but I was with him, and as Andrew Lloyd Webber was with the West End,
yeah,
popularizing classical music in the reverse.
Yeah.
And I put together a little show in 1980 called Dash, and because I was small, I got leaves of absence a lot, because if the ballets were all to do with the right heights and asymmetric and all to do with patterns, obviously I wasn't going to be used, because the look was the thing.
Sure.
And so I'd say, well, I've got my march on, can I have a couple of months off? I said, why? I said, well, I've just been offered to do the Ariel in the Tempest in the open air in Regent's Park, something like that.
Yeah.
And because I was really keen on acting and stuff, so I learned how to act a bit, you know.
Yeah.
And then I did She Stoops to Conquer on the radio. Judi Dench was in it. I was so daring, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. And she was very kind, though, I think it was kind she was, yes, that's it.
Was that very kind. Very nice to work with.
She was lovely.
Yeah.
She wore a pair of ballet shoes for the read-through, because we're all so nervous for the read-through.
Yeah.
And she crossed her legs and had a pair of point shoes on and looked at me, winked, and put them away. Nobody else saw it. Just to make me feel at home.
That's great.
It's great. And so then I did that. Then I did Winnie the Pooh at the Phoenix Theatre.
Yeah.
And over Christmas, I played Tigger.
Yeah.
I had to read the book. I'd never heard of it. I was brought up with Rupert Bear.
Yeah.
And Noddy, which was probably barred from most schools in those days. I mean, when I went to do the Tales of Beatrice Potter, I'd never heard of Squirrel Nutkin. Which I played. You know, I just sort
that
of.
That sounds
know,
like one of Freddie Mercury's nicknames.
It was an education.
Squirrel Nut Kingdom.
No, Sir Frederick Ashton, who choreographed it, called me Nutkinskaya. But, yes,
there's
a
huge amount of diversity in the sort of shows you've done, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's definitely not been, you know, one. You've definitely not done the same thing for your whole career, have you?
No, I was changing.
Yeah.
I didn't play safe, really. But anyway, so I put together this show because I had done contemporary classes. When I was a student, if you did contemporary dance, modern dance,
yeah,
you would get suspended for a week if they found out.
Really?
Yes, well, now everybody has to do it, and you have to have contemporaries all joined together. But then they were also separate, you see.
Yeah.
That's why I was ridiculed for going off and doing things like that. So I could act, I could dance, I could sing a bit, and Winnie the Pooh. That was Cameron's first production, I think.
Yeah.
And I remember on a Saturday, I found it a bit daunting, because I didn't tell them.
Yeah.
I said, yes, so I do an 11:30 at the Phoenix Theatre, run across and do Cinderella the Ballet at the Opera House, then do a 4:30 at the Phoenix in Winnie the Pooh, and then do a 7:30 back at the Opera House on Saturday. Well, I read that all these people like Little Titch had done it. They'd opened in the Old Vic.
Yeah.
And they'd travel across the river to close at the Pavilion or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they go up to Sadler's Wells for his second act, and God knows where they ended up.
Well, it's a bit similar to stand-up. I mean, on Fridays and Saturday nights in London.
Oh, yes. What
you
do
can
you
easily do,
go
on. You know, 4 or 5 gigs.
Do you?
Easily.
You see how fabulous.
So you can do the Comedy Store early show.
Yes.
And then you can go and do, you know, sort of the Banana Cabaret in Balham.
Yeah.
Come back for the late show at the Comedy Store. Then you can go and do a club around the corner. You could easily do 4 or 5 shows on a Saturday.
Really?
People do it.
Yeah.
It's great. And it's exciting as well. When, you know, when it's a Saturday night and you're in the West End, you know, doing four or five shows.
Fantastic.
What's more exciting
you
than that?
Greedy thing. No, I love it. I love all that.
It's
like the old musical. That's how it was. But of course, if you do something on TV, that's it.
Yes.
You've got to write new material.
Yeah.
Is that true? You do have to.
Yeah, I
think
so.
Some people repeat bits, but we love all that.
Well,
we love
it's
the
like a, it's sort of an unwritten rule. I mean, you can, people do break it, but generally speaking, I think if you've done something on TV, you shouldn't really be doing it. Because you don't want people to see you on TV and go, oh, we'll go and watch him, and then they come and see you and you do exactly what they've seen.
Oh, you can't do exactly, I suppose.
So
oh, no,
you,
I understand what you're
saying. They
you
come
said,
and watch
yes.
you live and...
Yeah, but in the old days, there wasn't television, is what I mean, so you could have one act forever, couldn't
you?
Oh,
well, like Morecambe and Wise famously just had an hour of material and they toured it for, like, you know, 20 years or something.
Did they?
Yeah.
But, that, well, that's because it wasn't on TV, was it?
Yeah, but they didn't. They never did it on TV.
Ah,
they
I
just,
see.
They had a touring show that
so,
they did.
Oh, I see, right.
For
clever.
20 years or something.
Yeah. Oh, I've never changed
I would
it.
Get very bored of doing
so
that.
Would I.
I like to get rid of things and change
yeah,
things.
Right.
You know.
Well, I think it's a bit, though, like a catchphrase or something. If there are jokes that people want you to do.
Yeah, I think if you had one of those jokes
a
that have become
one.
Massive.
Yes.
Like, I've been at
they'd,
shows...
They'd have to do it. They'd love it to see it. It's like Cliff if he didn't sing his
yeah, I
hit
suppose.
Records or
yeah.
Elton or... And, like, you know, me in my tiny way, if I didn't do my Charlie Chaplin or something like that.
Yeah, I haven't seen your Charlie Chaplin.
No, but I still do the Charlie Chaplin, but I don't do the Olga Corbett anymore. That's how I started.
Right.
This is why they said I was vulgar and disgusting. Because it within I could tap by this time, tap, jazz, ballet and contemporary. I could do all four at the right level, qualifying. So I'd get the best jazz dancer I could, the best tap dancer, the best ballet dancer and the best contemporary dancer.
Yes.
And there'd be four others who'd have to simulate each style and learn it. Like the girl from contemporary cried on the first day. She said, I'll never get this tap dancing stuff.
Yeah.
I said, don't worry, just keep going, just simulate the moves. So then I'd take the taps off the bottom so she couldn't make a noise. And then just before the end of the tour, after 12 weeks, without her knowing, I screw them back on and I tell the rest of the cast to just don't move. And there she was tapping away and she cried again with delight.
What's the, I mean, this is a very broad question, but what do you think is the most difficult, as someone who knows nothing about it, what's the most difficult type of dance to learn?
Classical ballet.
Yeah.
Because it's unfair. You have to be the right shape, neck, the shoulders mustn't be square, you have the sloping back, you have to have fairly long legs, all or all in proportion, exactly.
So there's a lot of things
you can't have a
control.
Loose back too loose.
Yeah.
You can't, oh, it's a nightmare. It's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, in your sell-by days, you're 35.
Yeah, it's like, you know, football. It's like sport.
Well,
it's a sport, really.
Yes, football, ballet.
And do you have that thing? I mean, and there's like an old... sort of a myth about ballet dancers' feet. Does it really damage your feet?
Well, it damages the boys more than the girls in a funny way, because there is another myth that men go on their toes.
Yeah.
What a load of rubbish. I mean, in some ballets, they might do it for some effect.
Yeah.
But of course we don't. We've never gone on our toes.
So what does that mean? That just means...
We spin on the ball of our foot.
Okay. Yeah.
On the rise. But you see, that is gives you more injury than the whole of the foot.
Why?
Because you've got the whole of the foot on point, but you've only got that joint, you know, that, and your big toe joint goes. Do you want to see my big toe joint?
What happens? Has it happened to your toe?
Do you want to feel it?
Well, what's happened to it?
No, I'm not showing it.
No, you don't.
Well, just touch there. Look, touch there.
Oh, wow.
Isn't it horrid?
Yeah,
see, look, that one doesn't have it. That's not as bad, you see. Look at that one. It's awful.
That's what happens.
So I need one shoe bigger than the other.
Wow.
But then you can have an operation to get that big nodule out.
Like a grater.
Oh, God, it's huge, isn't it? And it's going to get worse.
Like a bunion, isn't it?
But it's awful.
Yeah.
And it's can give you such pain. Yeah. But girls have that.
Yeah.
Mind you, they've got crooked, gnarled toes. They've got ugly toes. Men's toes are prettier than women's toes. Because they've been bleeding all their lives. And they've got calluses everywhere.
Sure, yeah.
Stuff like that's not nice. Not nice. I mean, you bleed. They bleed all the time. And they have to bang their shoes, you know, on the concrete.
Do that, yeah.
To soften them to the right thing. And they, some wear one shoe for this performance, then another one.
That's really hard.
Forever change.
So ballet is definitely the most difficult type of dance.
Yeah, and the least paid. You have a wonderful life.
I suppose there's a reason why they don't do it as one of the weeks on Strictly Come Dancing today. Ballet week.
Well, it doesn't, you know, it would just take so long to get right.
Yeah, ballet decade.
Well, they don't do tap either, do they?
No.
They do ballroom.
Have you ever had anything to do with Strictly?
No. I wouldn't have minded, but
you should
never
be one
invited.
Of the professionals.
Was never asked.
One of the judges.
Who knows? Never asked. Never mind.
The other person that came up when I, you know, when I was reading about Freddie Mercury and all this stuff was Princess Diana. How close were you with Princess Diana? How did you meet her?
Well, we were as close as friends could be, really.
Yeah.
I didn't know her before I met her, did I? Well, nobody knows anybody before they meet them. Stupid thing.
You must have been aware of who she was.
Of course I was. Yeah. I've read the newspapers. I mean, I'm not in a cell in the opera house. You know, I know they don't know a lot about the outside world, sure. I must say. It is cocooned, but I think we know our royals.
So, but what I mean by that is, when you met her, was she a royal already when you met her? You didn't meet her before?
No. Okay. No, I mean, it was... Oh. Well, the royals, I mean, well, the royals are our president.
Yes.
And, you know, the Royal Opera House and the Royal Ballet, you know, they're our bosses, really, you know. And if it wasn't for them giving us a royal charter to help us through, you know.
So is that just she came to watch a show, did she?
No, she'd already done all that, I think. Well, right. She knew who I was, anyway.
Of course she did.
And she wrote to... No, she got in touch with my manager, George, who owns this and this.
Who owns this building?
Yeah.
Whose leather shorts these are?
These were his leather shorts, yeah. Yes. He's Scottish.
Exciting.
He must have forgotten the train to somewhere. He landed in Austria. Never mind. So,
she emailed George.
No, she got in touch. Probably. I don't really think there were emails
before
in those
emails,
days,
were
there?
She sent over.
I think it was a fax machine.
Carrier pigeon to George.
Yeah. Yes, carrier pigeon. Bring back the carrier pigeon, I say. I'd love that. Anyway, so she said, would Wayne... I was already on tour with Dash. I'd just done Cats as Mr. Mistopheles.
Yes.
The next year I did Song and Dance at the Palace for a year, which ran 3 years. It was only meant to run 12 weeks. And I was doing Dash and I did 2 weeks at Sinuswell, totally sold out. See, I wrote to 15 theatres. And only two would accept a dance show because they said dance wouldn't make any money.
Right.
So it was the King's Theatre, Edinburgh and Chichester Festival Theatre.
Yes.
And I was at Chichester Festival Theatre and the first night the Times came to review it and he hated me, this guy from the Times.
Mm.
And I thought, well, that's it. It's never going anywhere because he's going to give it a bad review.
Yeah.
Anyway, he gave it the most amazing review I've ever read. And Bob Fosse's show was on around the corner. He said it was better than that and better than this. Anyway, the theatres couldn't wait to grab hold of my show by then.
Yeah.
So that Christmas I did a tour.
Yeah.
12 weeks. Then I did the Sadler's Wells Theatre for 2.5 weeks. Then
amazing memory.
Yeah, well, it's my life.
Yeah, but you remember exactly how many weeks.
Well,
you
would with the accolations you got and the money you got and the four houses you got. I mean, you haven't got a lot to remember at the moment, would you, really, dear? You know,
no, it's a good point.
And the queues round the corner for the matinee was 45 minutes because in those days you could get a ticket you buy in Harrods or somewhere,
yeah.
But then you had to take your voucher and change it for an actual seat,
yeah,
for the seat ticket.
Yeah, wow.
So it would all have to be changed at the box office. They thought it'd be empty.
Mm.
There was a queue round the block. There was slow hand clapping and all that.
Amazing.
Oh no, it was lovely.
Yeah,
and. So then in April that year, I did 8 weeks, and I think I extended for two at the Apollo Vittoria, which only seats about 2,500, isn't it?
Yeah.
3,000.
I think so.
Yeah, so I did 10 weeks there. And then that Christmas, I did the Dominion for 6 weeks.
Are there any theatres in the West End you haven't performed at?
Yes, there are.
Which ones?
I don't know. Right, okay, I haven't done the Vaudeville.
Yeah.
I've done the Savoy, I've done the Palladium, I've done the Coliseum, I've done the Opera House, I've done Drury Lane, I've done... What else is there?
The Wyndham Theatre.
The Wyndhams, no, haven't done the Wyndhams. I've done the Duke of York's, I've done... Yeah. I haven't done the Garrick, three.
Yeah. Noel Howard, have you done that?
No, he was there at the time, that's what... No, the Noel Coward was called something else. It was called the Queen's Theatre. Should have done that, shouldn't I? They're changing them all the time. Yeah. I haven't... I've done the new theatre, it was now the Aubrey Theatre. Well, yeah. I worked there as a dresser, so that'll do.
Okay,
and when I was a student. And then I've done the new London. What's over there? Shaftesbury Avenue. I've done the Lyric for galas. I've done... Most of them things. Then let's go up a bit. There's a lot of places. Then anything else around here? There must be tons of places. I didn't do the Whitehall.
Right. Oh, what about the...
I've done the Overick.
Haymarket. Theatre Royal.
Yes, done the Haymarket. Terrible rake.
Yeah.
Done the His Majesty's opposite with Francis on.
Albert Hall.
Oh, yes.
Silly question.
Silly. No, I couldn't find the front. It's all in the round. Every time I spun, I faced the back.
So which one was it that Diana came to? Well, she came to lots of them.
She used to come to the Royal Ballet when I was there, okay. You see.
And then you sort of...
And I don't know what else she saw. But she, sorry, yes, I digress. So she phoned George, or they phoned George, and said, would Wayne... She wants to keep fit and all that, but rather than go to the gym, she wants to actually have dance lessons. She wants him to teach her ballet and jazz, because I could do them all, you see.
Yeah.
She didn't do all ballet. She didn't want to do all ballet. So I could do a bit of ballet, a bit of jazz, a bit of tap, whatever.
So you were...
And I was the only one who could do it.
Diana's personal...
Because I was qualified and all that. Well, I could
Princess Diana's Zumba.
No, I was a personal choreographer, actually. Because she wanted to meet... So I sent my ballet mistress, who looks after the show. Because we had to have eyes every night out there making sure in the right lines and all that.
Yeah.
You need that when you're dancing and all that. Do you ever somebody out front sort of saying pause on that line longer?
Not
or something?
Really, no. No. Do you mean like a director?
Yeah. No, like somebody there every night to just give you... You know. Well, we have to because it's eight of us.
Yeah.
And if we get out of line a bit, it can happen on a tour.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
Anyway, so we have to have eyes. We've always got notes the next day about this and that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm still choreographing usually on the road to get it right for London.
Yeah.
And so I sent my dance captain, that's what she does, to London once a week to teach Diana jazz and ballet.
And she loved it.
She loved it. And then she came up with an idea and she said, I want to meet Wayne. And so on my day off, I trolled along to where she was... you know, in a little studio, and there she was with the leg warmers and leotard and tights and a little headband.
Yeah.
I said, hello. I remember thinking, what a beautiful woman she was, and how shy, in a way, she had.
Really?
Yes. And at that time, I was being very careful, and she said, I've got an idea, Mr. Sleep. I'd like... to dance with you at Covent Garden this Christmas. And I thought, oh my goodness, she's so tall, it's going to be hysterical. Laughing. And I said, oh yes. She said, I've got the music organised, and we know what we're going to do it to. We're going to do it to Billy Joel's Uptown Girl. So she was my Uptown Girl, so I looked at her and I said, but you know, our heights are just going to make them hysterical laughter, you know.
Yeah.
And so what? I'll wear my flatties. And I thought, what? So then I realised she had a sense of humour, it was all banter.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought, yes, we can do it tongue-in-cheek.
So you and so Diana decided
we danced Covent Garden for 2.5
Is it in the theatre? Which
that
theater?
Was in, no, it was in the piazza. What are you talking about? it was in the theatre. It's called Covent Garden. It's called the Royal Opera.
Oh, sorry.
But we called it Covent Garden. And every Christmas, you see, to thank the Friends of Covent Garden for all their donations, for helping keep it going.
Yeah.
We give a special party, where we used to, it's not done anymore, party for the members of the Friends.
Yeah.
And there's thousands of them. And they get a free dinner. No, they have to pay for a ticket, but they get a dinner. And we do a silly cabaret.
Yeah.
Like the ballerinas will do a kick line, you know, sort of like the Moulin Rouge or something. And I will sing a bit of opera. And then one of the opera stars will get in a tutu as a man and do a bit of Swan Lake. And so, you know, and then serious numbers as well. So, you know, it's quite the place to do it. And the year before, Princess Margaret had walked on and walked off in something, you know. And Prince Charles had done something there. Yeah. I remember what Prince Charles did. He did I Am the Pirate King. You know, and George said, oh, Prince Charles, may I ask what you're going to give us tonight? And he said, I am the Pirate King. And George said, a bit premature. I don't think he minded. They all have a good sense of humour.
Sounds like a sort of end of school.
Yes, it's like, an end of school part. Yes, concert, exactly.
Where the headmaster gives a speech.
Yes, and you all have to audition for it and stuff. That's that's exactly what it's like.
I remember that. Do you remember the at the big concert outside Buckingham Palace, the Jubilee concert.
Oh, yes.
And at the end of it, when Prince Charles gave, like, a thank you speech to everyone. Uh-huh. And it felt like the end of the school term or something.
Oh,
like,
right, did
like
it?
The whole country.
Oh, lovely.
And he was like, oh, I just want to thank all the performers. What a fantastic
Lovely. Yeah.
It just felt really, it was nice.
I like it. Yeah, it was, That's when they stopped bullying me in West Hartlepool Tech, because I got bullied a lot for being a dancer and all that, and, you know, jibes and things, and I just had to take it, basically. And but I auditioned for the Christmas concert when I was 11 or 12, 11, because it's the first year, but you had to audition. So I auditioned with my sailor's hornpipe from grade two of the Royal Academy of Dance. Anyway, they let me do it.
Yeah.
And then all, there's about 300 there. There was all the boys' school and the girls' college came, because we were all separate normally. And the girls were there and everything else. And so I did. Well, it got an ovation. I had to do it again.
Wow.
Yeah, I got an encore.
And
I
had to
It was only simple as a thing. And from then on, I became the school mascot. Here, Sleepy. My name was Sleepy.
Yeah.
Here, Sleepy. Do the splits. Quick. Now. And then rush me into the toilet. I'd do the splits and then go away happy. Gosh. It was good practice, I suppose. But, you know, when I was on stage, because I was in the choir.
Yeah.
And there was about 10 of us in the choir. So we're on stage behind the headmaster for morning prayers.
Yeah.
In the assembly hall.
Yeah.
And when I came on in my first pair of long trousers, all boys stood up and went, Sleepy's wearing long trousers, yay! So it quite turned to my favour, all this dancing suddenly, from the Christmas concert.
That's amazing.
And then they announced that I got into the Royal Ballet School as well, you know, when I was 12.
And what were people at the school... I don't know what it was. Did they not know?
Well, the kids, I mean, just fighting in the yard usually.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we didn't talk about it at all.
Yeah.
I suppose there was a little bit of that, but I don't think people really knew what it was. I mean, nobody's seen a ballet or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I did see a bit of ballet, but we could only see Act One because the last train was 8:30 back from Newcastle to Hartlepool. It took us 8 hours to get a train from Hartlepool to London.
8 hours?
Yeah, about 8 hours. And we sat up all night. But coming down for the audition, we had a sleeper so I could sleep. But going back, we had to sit up because we couldn't afford it.
I did a show at the Hartlepool Town Hall. Was that what it
was? Yeah, that's it. That was our well, it's a small, old, isn't
it? Really, yes, old.
But that was attached to the West Hartlepool Tech.
Which
is now a police station or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I nearly got arrested outside it. Because I was in a baby grove, 3 a.m. I said, oh, we're going past my old school, just going to nip out and get it. And somebody came in, morning, sir. It's all right. Because they changed it to police station. That's where I did my hornpipe.
That's amazing. That's
and you appeared there.
Yeah, fantastic. About a year and a half ago.
There you are.
It's a really nice theatre.
It's sweet.
And the audience were amazing.
Well, so was mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the boys. That's where we did morning prayers.
Right.
So there we are. We joined at the hip. Just one live together.
And the, oh, well, yeah, maybe in this room.
Yeah, well, There's a bed in the other one.
Just we've sort of run out of time, but
have we?
But do you think that you will? I mean, I think I probably know the answer to this, but will you keep working and performing?
Oh yes.
You will never stop.
I don't want to stop. What's the point?
Yeah.
I've tried retiring.
Yeah.
Staring at a bit of water in a pond with you in your house and in my bear or something. God, it's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
No.
And you still get just as much.
Well, I have to work. I haven't any money. I need pocket money.
But you still get just as much of a thrill from performing.
What I do is I do workshops. I go out and I'll get a few schools in the area around Leeds or something, and I'll find a central hall somewhere.
Yeah.
And they all come for the day.
Yeah.
They can do junior jazz or junior ballet or senior jazz or senior ballet.
Yeah.
But what I do is I create a role for them that they perform to their families at the end of the class.
Nice.
So they've got some inspiration to take home with them.
Nice.
And I make it amusing, but I make it... I mean, you can't teach kids how to dance in 1 hour. So that I don't do that. Everybody's welcome. They've got to be certain grades, you know, in the different classes. But I do it like a regiment.
Yeah.
You know, they're all in lines and but I teach them something and then I make them... Sometimes I make them make up the end of the piece and stuff like that. And they're so thrilled by the end of it. It's a day of inspiration, so I do that. I'm going to Vegas to do it as well.
Vegas.
Expenses only. Vegas at the end
what,
of
what are they called, these classes? Are they called...
What, mine? Yeah. Wayne Sleep Workshops.
Wayne Sleep Workshops.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I have my foundation, which is the Wayne Sleep Foundation, which is a charity.
Yeah.
And I raise money for that. And how that happened was a year after Diana died, they were still asking for interviews, the papers, on what she was like on the anniversary of her death. I said, I can't do it anymore, that's it.
Yeah.
Da, da, da.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we'll pay you. And I thought, oof, how much? No, not wanting money for myself, not like the others. And so they said a certain sum. I thought, well, I get all these letters from parents saying their kid has got a vocational place, but they can't afford to live there.
Yeah.
Because they have to leave home a lot. So I started that, and then I did galas and fundraisers and things like that.
Yeah.
And went to the jungle, got 88,000 for my charity.
Yes. Yeah.
And, and I did the chase. I got 4,000 for that.
So all
we
that
won.
Money goes towards the family.
Well, you know, to any, you know, your designated charity, all these shows.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And we get a few quid as well. And if you win, you get the money and it goes to my charity. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's for board and lodgings for a 3-year period. So if they've left home, sometimes it would be like the second year, the college will normally get in touch with me. I can't do individuals asking for money.
Yeah.
It has to come through the vocational college.
Yeah.
And it could be acting, dancing, singing, music, arts, writing, anything.
Yeah.
And it's sort of got a very broad spectrum to help people who are in such bad ways that they are going to be taken from the school because their father's fallen ill and they say, son, you're on your own. But they can work in the evenings, but now you have to have a degree in dance because it's the money comes from the education department.
Yeah.
So all these people are getting degrees in dance and never set foot on a stage. Oh, dear.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. Exactly. I'm not allowed to teach. I don't have a degree.
A degree?
I've got 3 honorary degrees.
Yeah. Honorary doctorate, is that right?
Yes, I'm deliterate.
Dr. Slim.
I'm deliterate from Exeter. No, I love it. I'm so thrilled. To be honoured, I've been honoured from people outside my establishment, not from people inside it.
Thank you so much for talking to me.
Oh, that's all right.
It was really fun.
I adore you. I like you, and you made me laugh. I looked you up on YouTube or something.
Yeah.
Yes, you were very good.
Thank you, Wayne.
You're only 80% gay. We'll see to that.
Wayne Sleep there, ladies and gentlemen. I really enjoyed chatting to Wayne. I thought he was very interesting and had so many stories and was a really sweet man. So if you're listening, Wayne, thank you very much for having me over. It was a great chat. A big thank you also to Joel Grove, who produces this podcast, to Will Shahada for editing, and to my manager, Rick Hughes, for all your help with it. And a big thank you to you for listening. I really appreciate it. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe on iTunes. Give it 5 stars, because I think that makes a big difference. And also tell your friends about it. But we'll be back next week with another brilliant guest from the world of entertainment.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.